Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. This week, Occupy Wall Street gains ground. Chris Christie and Sarah Palin opt out. Obama channels Harry Truman. And Steve Jobs is dead. Thousands have joined in the Occupy Wall Street protests now in New York and around the country. Agenda still in flux, but they've got a rallying cry.
We are the 99%! We are the 99%!
New Jersey Governor Chris Christie put an end to speculation and begging he will not run for president.
In the end, what I've always felt was the right decision remains the right decision today. Now is not my time.
And Apple tech visionary Steve Jobs died of cancer at 56. He shared his bottom line with Stanford graduates in a commencement speech in 2005.
Don't let the noise of others' opinions drown out your own inner voice. And most important, have the courage to follow your heart and intuition. They somehow already know what you truly want to become. Everything else is secondary.
This hour on Point, our weekly news roundtable with Mimi Swartz of Texas Monthly, Matt Continetti of the Weekly Standard, and On Point news analyst Jack Beatty. You can join the conversation. Republicans, what next? What now? Occupy Wall Streeters, what next? What now? And where is America's leading edge after Steve Jobs? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. A special welcome today to our listeners on Maine Public Broadcasting. We're glad to have you with us. Matt Continetti joins us from Washington, opinion editor at the Weekly Standard. Matt, it's great to have you back. Welcome.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Mimi Swartz joins us today from Houston, Texas. She's executive editor at Texas Monthly. Mimi, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
And On Point's Jack Beatty. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom, Mimi, and Matt.
Let's go right to Harry Truman. Oops, I mean President Obama, taking a page maybe from Harry Truman's playbook. We'll see how that works. Here he was at his press conference, pugnacious, on Thursday. Truman was elected, re-elected in 48 after assailing a do-nothing Congress on the campaign trail. President Obama tried to pick up a little bit of that juice, challenged Congress to prove him wrong by voting in favor of his jobs bill.
The question then is, will Congress do something? If Congress does something, then I can't run against a do-nothing Congress. If Congress does nothing, then it's not a matter of me running against them. I think the American people will run them out of town because they are frustrated and they know we need to do something big and something bold.
And when he's asked, what has he got? Here's his frustration again on Thursday.
Each time, what we've seen is games playing, a preference to try to score political points rather than actually get something done on the part of the other side. And that has been true not just over the last 6 months, that's been true over the last 2.5 years.
No way, said the House Speaker John Boehner. It's the president who's giving trouble to the nation, doing nothing. Here's John Boehner, Speaker of the House.
Nothing has disappointed me more than what's happened over the last 5 weeks. To watch the President of the United States give up on governing, give up on leading, and spend full time campaigning. I mean, we're on the Hill legislating. We've moved dozens of bills over to the United States Senate that are just sitting there that would help create jobs in America. No leadership from the president.
Mimi Swartz, in Houston, it's kind of painful to watch this debate over who's the bigger do-nothing leader. What do you make of this back and forth, and who wins public opinion in this contest?
Boy, you know, I think it's anybody's guess at this point, but I would say, I would hope Obama would win. I think the polls show that he's doing a little better against these people. I mean, the nation seems to want some action on jobs, and at least he's doing something positive.
Jack, we'll come to you on this, but Matt Continetti, what about John Boehner's counterpunch here? He says it's the president who's campaigning and not doing anything. Does that hold water when there's, you know, his bill that's waiting there, he's saying pass this bill?
Well, I think so, especially when the major resistance, at least at the moment, from the president's job bill isn't necessarily coming from Republicans. It's coming from Democrats in the Senate who are now rescheduling the vote for next week on millionaires tax. They want a substitute for the way that Obama has financed this jobs plan. I mean, I think it's a risky strategy for Obama to run against a do-nothing Congress for this reason. When Harry Truman made the same arguments, he was saying that the Republicans who had control of the Congress at the time were threatening the New Deal programs that were very popular. The problem with Obama is that the programs that he's defending aren't very popular. He hasn't explained why if the stimulus in 09 didn't work, why this half a stimulus would work. His Obamacare legislation is tanking, continues to tank. So it's a tougher argument for him to make than it was for Harry Truman.
Jack Beatty, what do you see? The president trying to get this dynamic going. Do you see traction here, or John Boehner got it?
Well, I think the president puts a pretty good logical proposition. He says, all right, Mark Zandi, other independent economists, have said that my jobs plan would create something over a million, million and a half jobs, would raise economic growth. Republicans, what's your plan? And, you know, he wants to say to them, how many jobs will repealing Dodd-Frank, financial regulation? That's one of the big Republican positions. How many jobs will that create? How many jobs will abolishing the EPA create? I think he's asking the right questions. What do the Republicans offer? Now, no doubt there are tax cut plans Republicans offer on the corporate side that would create some jobs, but would they match this, what the president wants to do? So I think, he's making an argument. It isn't simply just politics. There's a bill here. They could vote on it. The Senate is going to move on this. I think the resistance does come from the Republicans, certainly to the, the infrastructure spending and the school spending and so on. But they still may be able to meet in the middle on cutting taxes.
But let me ask you, Jack, about that resistance among Democrats. I mean, here's Janet Hook reporting, that Harry Reid's 5.6 tax on people earning more than $1 million to cover the cost of President Obama's, $447 billion jobs plan. She describes, this is in the Wall Street Journal, as a move designed to stem Democratic defections from a top White House priority. What do you say to that, Jack? What's going on?
Oh, absolutely. People like Claire McCaskill, Missouri, running for re-election, Joe Manchin in West Virginia, they wanted no part of the pay-for that would have essentially eliminated some tax breaks, tax deductions for people earning $250,000 or less. That was toxic to them because it could look like a, tax increase on the, quote, middle class. By pushing it onto the millionaires, it's a safer territory for them.
Mimi, how's that look from Texas perspective here? Do you see wide support for shipping it up to the millionaires to pay for the president's plan, or does that look like offloading?
I think there would be support for that here. I think, again, people here are pretty fed up. Despite what Rick Perry's saying, I think our economic situation here is looking pretty bleak.
In Texas itself, not just the country.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think they're ready for some kind of change that offers them any kind of way out of this. What I've been interested in is all of this talk of class warfare, where I think, we've had a certain kind of class warfare for a long time. Against the middle class and the poor, and I'm curious to see how that's going to play here.
We're going to look at Occupy Wall Street. I read somewhere that that's come to Houston as well now. Lots of warnings out there this week that the economy is in big trouble. Europe still hasn't got its hand around all that. Asia with its own issues economically now. Here was the Fed chairman, Ben Bernanke, defending the Fed's most recent stimulus efforts to a congressional committee and saying they were critical that the economy is close to faltering.
It's particularly important now that the economy is close. The recovery is close to faltering. We need to make sure that the recovery continues and doesn't drop back and that the unemployment rate continues to fall downward.
Well, what do you say, Matt? If it's close to faltering, and of course many think it could be, market's been going up and down, all kinds of fear that we could have big problems here. People still talking about a sort of a slip to depression. Can we wait until 2012 election day? Does anybody have something beyond what the president's offering to really get things moving?
Well, I think the president is basically offering more of the same, more fiscal stimulus and more of Bernanke monetary stimulus. And the problem for the president is that they've been pursuing that strategy now since Obama came into office, and the economy continues to be sunk in this mire. So it's just a hard argument for them to make, and you would just assume then, if they've been doing it now for 3 years and it's not working by their own standards, then the public would turn to an alternative approach and maybe say by next year it's time to try something new.
Of course, you could say a little gas gets you going 10 miles an hour, more gas gets you going 20 miles an hour. I mean, they're making that argument, many economists too, that it just hasn't been enough and that we're at risk of really sliding if we don't put some more into job creation right now, Matt.
I mean, we can live and talk about, you know, and speculate about what would happen if we decided, oh, well, we're going to have a $6 trillion stimulus or such. But the fact is we live in the real world. There are political constraints that are not only from the conservative movement but from the Democratic Party as well about what is possible. And what they have done so far has not brought us to a full, robust recovery. That's the fact.
That's clear. They say we need to do more. Jack, do you see the numbers there on Capitol Hill? If John Boehner says this is not the way to go, Democrats have some hesitation. Are there the numbers, one way or another, to get to the president's bill before, without waiting until November 2012?
Probably not. That's what people who look at this say. For one thing, that you've got to get 60 votes in the Senate, and they're not going to get that. So, I think the Social Security tax cut, maybe some tax cut, some targeted tax cuts for businesses, those things could go through. Maybe a little infrastructure spending, but nothing like as ambitious a plan as what the president wanted, which isn't ambitious enough, of course, given the problem it's trying to deal with.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about a week in the news. Occupy Wall Street cranks up. Governor Chris Christie opts out of the GOP presidential arena. President Obama channels Harry Truman. Steve Jobs is dead. You can join us this hour with Mimi Swartz. She's executive editor at Texas Monthly, joining us today from Houston. Matt Continetti with the Weekly Standard with us from Washington, and our own Jack Beatty. Let's get a call here from Dan in Quinque, Virginia. Dan, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I think it's important to challenge Matt Continetti's statement about the stimulus not working, and my understanding is that also the jobs bill proposal, according to independent economists, would indeed add many jobs, as did the stimulus 2 years ago.
So are you in the camp that says without the stimulus we had, we would have had a much worse economy, a much worse...
Certainly, as are most economists.
Yeah, Matt, I mean, a lot of economists do say that, and yet you just write it off as at failure. Is that just political positioning? I didn't say all.
You know,
I said a
George
lot.
George Bernard Shaw said you could line up 100 economists and none of them would reach a conclusion. Okay,
yeah.
So you're right. So there's a bunch of economists who look at the formula and say, oh, if I plug in these numbers, then I'm going to get this outcome. What I'm saying is by the Obama administration's own predictions, the 2009 stimulus did not work. Okay, the counter argument to that is, well, it was just so bad. We didn't understand how bad it was.
Mm-hmm.
My follow-up is twofold. One is, again, you're working in a political system where some things are just not possible. And then that leads you to my second point,
which is because of opposition.
Let me finish, Tom.
Oh, yeah.
Is that the Obama administration and the economists that you're citing believe mm-hmm. that the problem with our economy is one of consumer demand.
Mm-hmm.
I disagree. I respectfully disagree. The problem with our economy is debt. And there's no way that you can prod people into spending more when they are underwater in their mortgages and where they're underwater in their credit card bills and where they just have too much debt. And the answer to that, in my opinion, is not adding more debt to our economy.
But doesn't that leave us with just austerity and kind of eating dirt here? I mean, there is a huge economic school, as you know, that says, what? What? What other than just kind of eating dirt?
Why don't we tackle the problem? Why don't we actually go to the root of the problem and we can look at how we get through these mortgages, how we relieve the consumer debt, you know, and also why don't we be honest that this is going to be a long, hard slog because all of us, including the government, spent too much in the boom years.
But if that's – is the Republican argument then for just austerity?
That's not the Republican argument. That is the Matt Continetti argument, which I believe is what the caller challenged.
It seems pretty close to me. Jack, what do you see from the Republican side? Is it – I mean, in Europe, You've got a number of countries that have gone the austerity path, Britain among them. Now, they've got economic problems as well, and people warning there, be careful with this or you're going to tip the whole continent, maybe the world, into depression, or maybe that's the way to go, Jack. Clean the slate. Take the pain.
Well, it would, you know, Herbert Hoover, I think, showed that wasn't the way to go. Government after government in the early 1930s made that mistake and made the Depression worse. I don't hear as much austerity from the Republican candidates as sort of more of the same, not more of the same of what Obama has given, but more of the same of George Bush. More tax cuts, more deregulation. Now, maybe those, in fact, would work. But, of course, what Matt said about the Obama plan applies in spades to the Republican plan. How can you have tax cuts when you've got debt so much, you know, it's just going to create more debt. It's going to create more deficit. So I think both in terms of fiscal soundness, the Obama stimulus plan versus the Republican tax cutting plan, I don't know. I suppose they're both equivalent. The advantage for the Obama plan, it seems to me, is you get some infrastructure. You get something for it. You get some roads. You get some fixed schools. And you get people to work now.
Mimi, the time ticks by here. Ben Bernanke warning that, you know, we're on the edge here. Texas is a really interesting state in this situation, watching all this. I mean, again, who do you think's got the stronger hand? Rick Perry would suggest that Texas would be in the Republican camp. You're watching the whole state. Who's got the stronger hand with, let's say, the Texas population? We'll finally see at the polls. But between these two worldviews about what to do when we're still teetering and a lot of people in trouble, who's got the momentum?
Well, I think it depends on what happens in the next few months. I think Perry has campaigned on job creation, but he's also made so many cuts in the budget that I think more and more people are going to lose their jobs. And if that really happens, then Perry and the Republicans, I think you will see a shift. It may not happen right away. But I think that the whole issue here is keeping people in work or creating more work. There was a poll where Obama was ahead of Perry in Texas. I mean, this is sort of the dirty little secret, is that people here aren't that happy with him, with Perry. This is the economic environment that he has created, and I think they're going to keep getting more unhappy with him.
Unhappiness in any number of towns and cities in this last week, the Occupy Wall Street movement growing. Last year, it was all about Tea Party, and we saw how that wound its way to the front of American consciousness. Now here comes Occupy Wall Street on its own kind of path. And here's Michael Moore right out front last week. He spoke at Manhattan Zuccotti Park Wednesday night using the human microphone, sort of repeat thing they've got going there because they're not allowed to use bullhorns, I guess. He said the protests were in response to the greed of Wall Street's titans.
And now the American people
want that boot removed.
Now. Not next year. Now.
Michael Moore and the gang in Zuccotti Park there, and here's Jason Pottinger in the Occupy Boston protest. Talking with NPR this week, said individuals were protesting all kinds of issues, suggested one, maybe, common cause.
1% of Americans control 50% of America's wealth, and they're using that wealth to undermine the democratic process right now. So a lot of this has focused on economic reform. It's not that we have anything against wealth, and it's not that we have anything against capitalism. We just want to make sure that our democracy is functioning the way that it's supposed to function.
Just that little thing. Let's go to our listeners, Sam in Malden, Massachusetts. Sam, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. A great program and great subject. I was wondering what the guest thinks of a couple points that seem to me. And the first one is, I noticed that the mainstream media has really stayed very far away from the Occupy Wall Street movement until very, very recently. And when they have touched it, they seem to go out of their way to try to belittle it or make it seem insignificant or it's a bunch of hippies. And then the second related point was, it seems that President Obama is trying in the latest positioning of his presidency to align himself with the Occupy Wall Street movement. And I wonder if the guests think this is going to work. I mean, my own personal opinion is I don't think it will, because he's so responsible for so many of the problems in furthering, you know, tax cuts for the wealthy, continuing two wars.
But there was definitely that tone in his press conference this week.
Maybe the last thing was, you know, that Obama seems to support the legalized gambling that really is what Wall Street is. And when these gamblers lose their bets, we have to bail them out. And I think that's really what is so upsetting.
Hey, Sam, let me ask you on the media front, if I may ask you, Sammy, when do you think the media should swing in and start covering something? I mean, is it when it's, you know, a couple hundred people in New York? Is it when 700 get arrested? I mean, what's the point at which a protest movement deserves big-time national media coverage? This is getting sort of interpreted two ways. You know, some are saying they've come in too fast to cover it. There's others saying they waited too long. What's the point at which it deserves that, Sam?
Well, I think it's when, you know, the media has to make a judgment around issues. And I think that the Occupy Wall Street movement was galvanizing around issues that most common people, according to polls, you know, they do these polls that, you know, the majority of people are against the war in Afghanistan. The majority of the people think
those are polls, but don't you have to have feet in the street before it really deserves the big coverage? I mean, don't you have to have numbers?
I'm trying to answer your question.
I'm listening.
When the media has to analyze and see, gee, it looks like this movement is reflecting what the polls reflect, we should look into this. And they seem to really, really stay very far away from it, much the same way that Obama has, you know, stayed away from it, and now he's trying to jump in. So
Sam, we've got it. Let me take it to my guest. I appreciate your call. Mimi, how do you look at it? You're an editor there in Houston. Do you think the media held off giving coverage to Occupy Wall Street for too long, or is giving it a bigger bullhorn than it deserves now, or just about right? What?
Well, it's hard to say from here. I happened to be in New York 2 weeks ago or 10 days ago and saw, you know, we were sort of walking down by the World Trade Center, and it was like, well, what's this? And it was nascent. I mean, there's one guy in Houston standing outside what used to be the AIG building. So I can't say the movement. But I think, you know, it makes sense to me that a lot of the movement's going on Facebook and Twitter. I think that's where things are now. I think, you know, how many people really pay attention, I hate to say this, to the mainstream media? They're going to be late. And I think most of the people involved in this are taking part on a completely different level with completely different media.
Jack, how do you judge it these days? With the number of tweets that include Occupy Wall Street or the number of feats on the ground in the street? When is it time to say, hey, there's something really happening, let's look at it? And is it enough? You know, our caller Sam says, well, they've got an issue that's supported in the polls. Is that enough? Or to get, you know, coverage as a movement, do you have to see the movement?
You probably have to see the movement. Van Jones, the former advisor to the Obama administration, says you're going to see an American fall that's like the Arab Spring. Well, it remains to be seen whether these demonstrations will be sustained. It helps that now unions have joined. That gives some staying power. But beyond that, you know, opinion changes by people saying things in public. That's how it crystallizes what people think inchoately. They recognize, yeah, that I agree generally with that. Well, I haven't heard in years issues of economic justice getting such salience. I turn on the tube and I hear people talking about bought government. I happen to think that's the government we have. I turn on the tube and I hear people citing statistics that this program has pointed out over a decade of growing economic inequality. You know, you just can't get suddenly those ideas, those realities are being reflected. And I think to Sam's point, politics hasn't dealt with this. You know, this hasn't been what politics was about. And if politics can be about this, well, that it seems to me, would make this a fairer country.
That torch being raised by those in the streets, pushback here from GOP presidential candidate Herman Cain, talking here with Alan Murray of The Wall Street Journal, saying he does not sympathize with Occupy Wall Street.
I don't have facts to back this up, but I happen to believe that these demonstrations are planned and orchestrated to distract from the failed policies of the Obama administration. Don't blame Wall Street. Don't blame the big banks. If you don't have a job and you're not rich, blame yourself.
If you don't have a job, blame yourself. What do you say, Matt, about Herman Cain, about Occupy Wall Street?
Well, he's wrong about Occupy Wall Street. There's no evidence that suggests that these are planned and coordinated to distract from the Obama administration's record. I actually watched the full interview where he gave that quote, and mm-hmm. I think it's interesting because we clip out what he said right after, which is that he says Herman Cain says that he grew up in an ethic where his mom and dad taught him that, you know, you were individually responsible, and he was contrasting that with some people who say that it's, you know, society's fault. I think that's a better way to understand what he's saying there. We can agree or disagree, whatever. I want to say this about Occupy Wall Street, which is that to me what's fascinating about it is that it illustrates the problem that Barack Obama is having with his political base, and it suggests to me that the left has moved beyond Obama, so that the left has progressed beyond Obama, and is now looking at something very different. And I think that they're right to, in a way, simply because when you look at the structure of both our parties, you know, there's not one that's, you know, less bought by Wall Street or not. I mean, I was just going over the figures from the 2008 cycle. If you look at the 10 richest counties in America, most of which are in New York City, where the protesters are, the donations from those counties go to the Democratic Party at astronomical rates, 86%, 84% of donations. So, you know, this is a real problem for Obama because he's tried to walk this line throughout his presidency of being, well, close enough to Wall Street so that the bankers don't abandon him and that he can keep Tim Geithner as his Treasury Secretary and, you know, be friendly with the economists and bankers who staff his administration. But at the same time, he's trying to play that populist card, and the populist card hasn't worked. And perhaps it's the reason is that because he's just as much a part of the Wall Street problem as anybody.
Mimi, what do you think? Does Occupy Wall Street end up becoming a kind of turbocharge for Obama, for the Democrats perhaps, that the Tea Party became for the Republican Party in the midterm elections? Or have they, as Matt says, has this movement moved beyond President Obama?
I agree with Matt. I think there's, you know, these were the same people, I think, who were so hopeful about Obama. And I think you're seeing that disappointment now. He I think by rolling back the Bush, by maintaining the Bush tax cuts, I think that was a signal to them that he just wasn't going to do the kinds of things they wanted. On the other hand, I'm surprised that these people haven't been marching in the streets before. And I will be curious to see how much bigger, how much more quickly the movement grows.
Jack, what do you think? Are these troops in waiting for the Obama reelection campaign, or is this a third force of some kind on its own?
Well, clearly the president wants to annex it. Now, if there's any violence in these demonstrations, that could wind up hurting the Democrats or people who, you know, align with it. But I want to go back to a point Matt made. I think he's absolutely right. The president has tried to put the, you know, he's talked populist on Monday and with Larry Summers on Tuesday. And you know, the fact is he wants to get $750 million to absolutely destroy the Republican candidate. That's his only hope of reelection. He's not getting that from what I've been reading from the small donors. They're not, it's nothing like what they had before. Where is he going to get it? He's going to get it from people who have the bucks. He's going to get it from the interests. He's going to get it from the very people that on the Monday he's decrying. So I do think that there's a contradiction there. And also, I think temperamentally, this is you know, the president was the president of the Harvard Law Review. You don't get there if you're a populist. You get there if you're a person who, you know, prospers in our current system, who doesn't see anything terribly wrong with it. And I every time I see the president, I think, well, he's a very bright man, but the system has really worked for him. Does he have a sense of why it's not working for other people?
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. In other news this week, three women win, share the Nobel Peace Prize, two Liberians and a brave Yemeni. Their nonviolent work for peace, democracy, and gender equality brought them the award.
The Norwegian Nobel Committee has decided that the Nobel Peace Prize for 2011 is to be divided in three equal parts between Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, Laima Bowie, and Tawakkul Karman.
Swedish poet Tomas Tranströmer wins the Nobel Prize for Literature. Here he is with the beginning of his poem Allegro.
Jag spelar Haydn efter en svart dag och känner en enkel värme i händerna. Tangenterna vill, milda hammare slår. Klangen är grön, livlig och stilla.
Amanda Knox's Italian study abroad murder mystery nightmare is over. She was acquitted in Perugia, Italy, and released from jail.
Welcome home, Amanda! Yeah.
What's important for me to say is just thank you to everyone.
And Hank Williams Jr.'s big song is off Monday Night Football after he rambled on about Obama and Boehner, Hitler and Netanyahu 20 years and gone.
Are you ready for the football? From Al to Walter, Barry and Bo, even Johnny Hughes played on this show. The NFL's best shine under these lights, cause legends are made on Monday Night. Ready.
We're looking at a week in the news. Occupy Wall Street cranks up. Governor Chris Christie and Sarah Palin opt out of the GOP presidential race. President Obama channels Harry Truman. Steve Jobs is dead. Matt Continetti is with us from the Weekly Standard. Mimi Swartz from Texas Monthly and our own Jack Beatty. Pamela is calling from Concord, Massachusetts. Hi, Pamela. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I think that the media deserves a lot of the opposite of praise. They're not covering the issues. You're talking about what people think rather than what is. If we want to create jobs, enforce the EPA regulations. That will get big oil and big coal to use their profits to create good permanent technical and engineering jobs, save the environment, improve the economy, and improve the world as well as the health of the people. Everything we can do to improve the environment, we must do
Pam,
for the good of all mankind.
Do you hear that particular message, let's say, in the bundle of cries we're hearing from Occupy Wall Street?
Yes, I do. I hear we need the rule of law enforced on everybody. Bankers and the finance companies broke the law. The SEC is being corrupt. It's not being able to enforce it. We're not even getting the Consumer Financial Protection Agency implemented in Congress. It's not a question of Democrats versus Republicans. It's a question of us, the people, versus a broken government.
I hear that loud and clear, and yet it comes down to votes. But Pamela says, look at what is. Pam, thanks for your call. Ray in Iowa City, Iowa. Ray, you're on the air. Hello, Ray, you there?
Hi, Tom. I have absolutely no sympathy whatsoever for this Occupy Wall Street crowd. I'm a business owner myself.
Mm-hmm.
I served in the military. I came out of the military. I started a small trucking company. I started with 3 trucks. I've built it up to 624 trucks today. I'm one of those evil rich people so many people like these Occupy Wall Street crowd, they just can't identify with, because it seems like they want everything handed to them. They expect the government to just give them a job, or whatever they want should just be handed to them. What happened to people doing as I've done? You start out at the bottom, and you work your way up.
Ray, you sound like you've got, you're channeling some Herman Cain there. Let me ask you, Ray, your 624 trucks, how have they been doing in the last couple of years? Do they have freight to carry?
Oh, absolutely. We pull reefer units, refrigerated units, and no matter what the economy does, people have to eat, so we're staying plenty busy. But I wanted to say, I have created jobs, okay, and I do contribute to the economy. In addition to the drivers, I have office personnel. I have mechanics that I pay. I pay federal income taxes, state taxes, road use taxes, fuel taxes.
And thank you for that, Ray. Thank you for that. Let me ask you, what about the people who just don't have a job and can't find one? What do you say to them? I mean, can you understand how they might be frustrated and maybe even in the street at this point? It's been a long time.
Well, sir, I don't see how they're going to find a job if they're out in the street demonstrating. And I've got news for them. The government does not create jobs. If the government could create jobs, we wouldn't have had zero job growth last year. What the government needs to do is get away from trying to create jobs themselves and instead create a favorable economic climate so that the private sector can create jobs.
Ray, I appreciate your call. We've got it, and I appreciate it very much. Let me get one more here. Carl in Ithaca, New York. Carl, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I think Ray has made some valid points, but the environment that exists now is not necessarily going to help people do what Ray did. I would also like to say that the response to the Occupy Wall Street people by the Republicans is just off the charts. They're starting to sound like some third-world dictators who are so used to speaking to their own, faithful that they're off the facts. Bill O called them communist sympathizers. Romney called them un-American. I think we got to start putting this out. They are starting to sound like the ideal Koch brothers minions, and they sound like they're trying to create just like Perry is in Texas. They're trying to create the ideal Koch brothers state, which uses fear, ignorance, don't educate people, strap them to three jobs so they can eat. So they have no choice but to just work while, horrible air and water pollution, the lowest literacy rates ever. And that's what Texas is, an ideal Koch brothers state. That's where it's going.
Carl, I appreciate your call. We'll pick it up there. We'll take it to Mimi in Houston. But, Jack, what about the sort of political chemistry in this country? You were saying earlier you're hearing kind of critique in the streets and now on the air that you haven't heard in a long time. Yet it comes up against, obviously, a different view here. Ray puts it very plainly. Uh-huh. There's been energy in the Tea Party. We're seeing some energy now in Occupy Wall Street. What's the chemistry of the meeting of these things? Are they polar? Do they overlap somewhere? How do you just pick it apart, Jack?
I think they do overlap somewhere. Lawrence Lerner, the law professor at Harvard, had a constitutional convention a month ago with people from the Tea Party. And what was their joint platform? As I understood it, it was let's repeal, or through constitutional amendment, I think, the Citizens United decision of the Supreme Court. Let's try to get money, corporate money, big money, out of politics. So I, from watching the Tea Party rallies, I sense that in those rallies too. They were against the fix that they thought the Bush administration and the Democrats had with Wall Street by bailing out Wall Street. Well, of course, I think that was probably the right thing to do, but I understand how people feel that way. But they were furious at what looked like Wall Street paying all this money to the politicians and the politicians paying all the money back out to Wall Street. So I do think there are, the right populism and the left populism meet on that really critical issue.
Matt, what's your compare and contrast on Occupy Wall Street and Tea Party?
Oh, no, I agree with Jack that there is some overlap, that they both express this kind of frustration with bigness, and whether it's big government or whether it's big business or whether big Wall Street or big media, it's the same thing. And what I get from the callers in particular is a sense of anger and even anecdotally, just meeting, talking to people, it seems that there's something with our public discourse. People are getting very, we've reached the point where we're getting very angry. And that does not bode well for incumbents.
The Tea Party was pretty angry already last year.
They were angry, but now what you have is the left is getting just as angry. And so, how is that directed? And it's the analogy isn't perfect, but you go back to 67, 68, when the left gave up on Johnson and the Great Society liberalism, and went in a very different direction. And I don't think anyone could have predicted how that 68 election really went out, eventually giving rise to Richard Nixon. So we might be in a similar situation today where things are so splintered and fractured that the outcomes may be completely surprising next year.
Let's go to Jack in Nashville, Tennessee. Jack, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Yes, Tom.
Hi.
Yeah, I was at a rally yesterday here in Nashville, which was an Occupy Wall Street rally, and there were Tea Party people there.
Were they in support? Were they against?
They were in absolute accord with the message that it's not about Republicans or Democrats. It's about corruption. And Ray, no disrespect on a personal level, but as an analyst, is an idiot. I make a six-figure income. I bought a house here in Nashville 4 years ago. I've lost 30% of the value, over $100,000 of my money went down the drain to the criminal activity on Wall Street. Now, lest you think this is not criminal activity, you're talking to the wrong legal analysts. Because there certainly are plenty of people out there who will tell you if you sell a credit default swap, an insurance policy with no cash backing, that is fraud. There's no ambiguity about this. The president doesn't even seem to understand the fundamentals of law, and he has a background in constitutional law.
Jack, so we got it. And we got it. I'm particularly interested in your description of Tea Partiers out with Occupy Wall Street people in Nashville anyway. I mean, Mimi, do you see room for some merger here, or does this get herded into, you know, polar camps? Does it naturally settle into polar camps?
Well, I agree with the caller. I think, well, with the most recent caller, I think the distinction is I don't think people are marching in the streets about small businesses that become large businesses. I think, you know, like the caller that's got his trucking firm, I think what they're upset about is the corruption of people who don't produce anything but a bigger and bigger casino. And I'm, you know, again, I'm a little ashamed to admit this, but I'm from the place that brought you Enron, and I think that was the beginning of this. And we're coming up on the anniversary, and I wonder, again, if people are able to see that this is – that we've got – well, I'm getting a little tangled up, but if they're going to go with these Wall Street – you know what? I'm going to cede this to someone else.
Okay. We'll leave it right there with a memory of Enron. Bob in Burlington, Vermont. Bob, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
I think first point is to try to put a corral around the Tea Party to say they're for or against one thing or the other ignores their fluidity. But my main point is I think that with the Occupy Wall Street thing, they're going to get to the point where they just congeal around unrestricted democracy and unregulated capitalism cannot exist in a system. One will always buy the other out. As long as we have the Popes in North Carolina and the Cokes running around all over the country, capitalism is going to win. I think we're going to boil down to ending corporate personhood and campaign finance reform is the only thing that's going to salvage our democracy.
But I mean, we had both for quite a long time, Bob, before it seemed to get quite to this pass, didn't we?
Well, you know, I think these things are cyclic. It's like personalities. They become sine waves. You get money in one person's hand. It has a tendency to promote the agenda that they want. Eventually, the masses, the 99% that has now been identified by OWS as, you know, their goal. They push back enough that there's a little more distribution. I mean, we got to the Kennedy, the Great Society. We distributed wealth. All of a sudden, that resulted in an accumulation of wealth when focuses changed later on. It's been cyclic, I think, throughout our history.
Yeah, we're riding cycles, but we're in a tough patch right here with those. Let's turn just briefly to the GOP on that front. Matt, how do you see it settling out with Governor Christie saying, no, I'm not going to get in there, Sarah Palin saying, no, I'm not going to get in there? Does this redound to Mitt Romney, to Governor Perry, to Herman Cain, Matt?
Well, the field is definitely set, and you have Mitt Romney as a front runner. He is the weakest front runner in my memory. Barely pushing 30% in some of the polls where he does the best. What that suggests to me is that the race will boil down to a Romney and an anti-Romney, who will probably be a populist and who will probably be appealing to the more conservative base of the Republican Party, and who would also be likely to win Iowa and the contests in the South, with Romney taking New Hampshire, Michigan, Nevada, some other places where he's strong.
Mimi, what do you see from Governor Perry in that formula? He's raised a lot of money, but his poll numbers don't look so great. Does he hang in, tap anger, and beat Mitt or not?
I don't think he beats Mitt, although my colleague Paul Burko would say never bet against the guy. The $17 million he raised recently that made so many headlines, half that money came from Texas. So I'm not sure he's really got the national support that he would certainly like to have, and I think his performance in the debates has hurt him there.
Jack, what do you see unfolding on that GOP stage?
Well, Tuesday is a crucial moment for Governor Perry. Polls have shown that 85% of Republican primary voters think debates are very important. I mean, that's they're watching. They're really watching. And that hurt, you know, his performances have hurt him. If he gives a strong performance and is able to articulate his points, I think it could put him right back into it again.
Right back into it. And which way? So you think in it or, you know, really neck and neck with Romney? Do you think the conservative impulse is going to stand up to the Romney kind of manager business impulse here on the GOP side?
Well, I think that, you know, it's the heart and the head. I mean, the head would say the White House is worried about Mitt Romney, and probably for good reason. But the heart would say we want to go with someone who represents our passion. And Rick Perry, at least for a while, seemed to. So I think if he can seem sound and sane and articulate, I think he can get back in.
Mimi, you know him well. Does he ride this horse all the way? Does he pull a Christie at some point and say, I'm out of here?
I doubt it. I think he will ride it all the way. And he probably will do better on the 19th, you know, in this next debate. But I'm not sure whose heart and head he represents in the Republican Party. I think there's a split there that hasn't really come to the fore that we'll see in the next few weeks.
Yeah, that's kind of against the storyline. We'll watch to see if something opens up right there. Mimi Swartz with Texas Monthly, joining us today from Houston, Texas. It's been great to have you. Thanks so much for coming
in. Thank you very much.
Matt Continetti with the Weekly Standard, joining us today from Washington. Thank you so much, Matt.
Thanks, Tom.
And Jack Beatty, thanks as always for being here.
Thank you, Tom.
Wow, so much to watch. Listeners, thank you for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.